Russia scores a membership in the World Trade Organization.
And the EPA goes back to the drawing board on cutting coal emissions. Hello, I'm Jeff Horwich in Los Angeles.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Wednesday, August 22nd. How much does it cost to raise kids? We'll take a look a little later in the show.
And, Stacey, there's big news in late-night television. You and I work kind of early, so we're not big consumers of late-night TV. But if you're a Jimmy Kimmel fan, ABC is moving Jimmy Kimmel up an hour to compete head-to-head with Leno and Letterman. This has basically never happened, the three big broadcast networks all with their big guns at the same time in late-night. We're going to talk with someone about the context for that move. And a bunch more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
After nearly two decades of negotiations, Russia is now officially a member of the World Trade Organization. It's an economic boon for Russia. Its estimated foreign tariffs cost the country's exporters as much as $2 billion a year. It's also an economic boon for most of the WTO's members. But not the U.S. That's because of a 1974 amendment passed by Congress to punish the Soviet Union for preventing Jews from emigrating. Peter Van Dyke has that story from Moscow.
Joining the WTO means Russia will lower import tariffs and open up to more foreign competition. But the Jackson-Vanik Amendment means new rules won't apply to U.S. companies.
If we don't repeal Jackson-Vanik, it's as if, for the United States, Russia never joined the WTO.
Bill Watson is a trade policy analyst at the Cato Institute in Washington. He says Congress can't think beyond the November elections, and it doesn't want to be seen to be giving Russia an easy ride on issues like human rights and corruption.
They ought to be looking at this whole issue as a jobs bill, something to do to create economic opportunity to open Russian markets to U.S. products.
Watson says the U.S. wins more than Russia from its entry into the WTO. But the Jackson-Vanik Act means other WTO members get a head start. That's why U.S. companies doing business here have long lobbied to get rid of the amendment. In fact, right now it's about their biggest job. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
Greece has officially asked for more time to make financial reforms required by its bailout agreement with Europe. European markets closed down around 1% across the continent. Asian markets fell as well. In Japan, falling exports to Europe and China pushed the country into a much larger than expected trade deficit.
RBS is the latest British bank to face questions about violating U.S. sanctions against Iran. According to the Financial Times, RBS itself brought the concerns to U.S. and U.K. regulators. And this morning, clean air regulators at the Environmental Protection Agency are confronting a court decision that went against them. A federal appeals court has rolled back new EPA rules designed to cut emissions from coal-based power plants. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Scott Tong.
A federal appeals court ruled the EPA overstepped its authority to regulate power plants. The issue is pollutants linked to asthma and health disease. When the wind blows, people downwind suffer. So EPA tried to force polluters upwind to buy smokestack controls or to run less often.
The court found that EPA had required too much pollution reduction from those power plants.
That's John Walk at the Natural Resources Defense Council. EPA says the rule would have cost industry almost $1 billion to comply, but it tallied nearly $300 billion in health benefits. Still, industry fought it and won. So now an older rule applies, but a court has found that too soft. Hello, Goldilocks?
EPA has been whipsawed between two court decisions now, one in 2008 ruling that EPA had not done enough to protect the public, and one that EPA had done too much to protect the public.
EPA can go back to court or craft a new rule. Either way, many think a number of coal plants may close anyway, due to competition from natural gas. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And from late night feedings to the teenage years, there's no question that having children comes with some emotional costs and benefits, as you can speak to, Jeff.
I know. I bring up my kid far too much in this podcast. So, but yes,
no,
that's
never,
true.
Never.
I'll allow you to continue.
But what about the cold, hard cash involved? That's what we're taking a look at in today's Money Matters. That's our regular segment exploring how the news of the day affects our pocketbooks. Today, Marketplace Money's Adrienne Hill joins me, and she has something of a personal interest in the topic. Her first child is due later this year. Good morning, Adrienne.
Good morning, Stacey.
So let's get down to brass tacks. In fact, this should be very pertinent for you.
It
is. How much does raising a kid cost?
Well, on average, the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates a middle-income family with two parents will spend about $250,000 from age 0 to age 18.
Wow, that sounds like a lot.
It is. It's a big number, but the cost actually completely depends. And here's Mark Lino, who wrote the government report.
Costs vary by household income. The more income you have, the more you spend on a child.
The cost also depends on where in the country you live. Urban areas in the Northeast are most expensive, and how many other kids you have.
So the second kid is cheaper than the first, the third is cheaper than the second?
Exactly right.
So what makes kids so costly? I mean, it's not like the parents are buying infinite stuffed animals or PlayStations, I imagine.
It'd be fun. Toys are not the top expenditures. Housing costs make up a big chunk of the cost of a kid, which is about a third of the cost of a kid. You need a place to put them and let them sleep. You've also got to pay for childcare, food, transportation, healthcare, and you got to keep them clothed.
I guess so. I guess that depends on where you live. But Adrian, are some ages more expensive than others for kids?
You might think babies would cost the most, and I kind of expected that they were. Turns out I was wrong, and here's Lino again.
Teenagers are the most expensive. They have high transportation costs. These are the years when they start to drive, so you add them onto your auto insurance. And they also have high food costs.
Not to mention the emotional cost, I imagine.
All those Kleenexes girls require.
Exactly, exactly. but do these numbers include college?
They don't, which if you have a college-bound kid that you're hoping to help out, can raise these numbers dramatically. The study also doesn't include any other costs after 18, which, as a lot of parents will tell you, is not when the bills stop coming in.
Our own Adrian Hill. Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you, Stacey.
So tell me, Jeff, what is your commute to work like?
It is about 20 minutes in the wee hours of the morning when my family is asleep.
And stressful, would you say?
Actually, not bad. If you got a commute in L.A., the best time to do it would be right around midnight heading into downtown. No stress there.
That is true. Well, apparently, a new study from the University of Sheffield in the U.K. found that women actually get 4 times more stressed out than men on their daily commutes.
Oh, why is that?
Well, they think it might be partly because women tend to add errands on their way to and from work, things like food shopping and picking up kids. Mm-hmm. But that's apparently not all of it, because even single ladies with flexible hours suffered more, as they called it in the study, mental anguish than men commuting to and from work.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Publicly supported Amtrak has been financially off the rails for years. So how is it that a 100% private rail line is steaming ahead with a route from Miami to Orlando? Florida East Coast Industries aims to get its $1 billion rail line, it's called All Aboard Florida, up and running by 2014. From WMFE in Orlando, here's Matthew Petty.
Florida East Coast Industries already owns 200 miles of track along the 240-mile route. The company says ridership studies show the passenger service can be a success.
There's a demand. People want to ride it. They want the alternative to driving or taking the bus or, in some cases, taking a flight.
Susie Wiles, a spokesperson for the project, says the trip will take just under 3 hours and could cost something in the range of $130 one way. That's about twice as fast and twice the price of an Amtrak ticket from Orlando to Miami. Waiting on an Amtrak platform in Orlando, Jerry Dallaire says he'd consider riding the new train if it's comparable to the cost of gas and tolls.
Yeah, actually I would. I hate to drive down there. And I've been reading about it. And yeah, if they can get that thing going, I think it would be useful.
Linton McDonald Jr. says he'd take the train to see friends in Miami.
If it's just a once in a blue moon kind of thing, I would be willing to pay, you know, whatever the asking price is. Price of convenience, I guess.
It could prove to be a game changer for South Florida.
Eric Dunbar, the director of the School of Urban and Regional Planning at Florida Atlantic University, says Amtrak could soon have some competition on its hands. He says the Miami to Orlando corridor is just one of the so-called mega regions in the U.S. where the need for intercity passenger rail is growing.
It makes less and less sense for these sorts of trips to be accomplished via the airport. They eat up a lot of airport capacity that might be better served to handle larger and more profitable flights.
Dunbar says if privately funded intercity rail line turns a profit, high-speed rail could even be back on the table in Florida. In Orlando, I'm Matthew Petty for Marketplace.
Luxury home builder Toll Brothers said today that quarterly profits jumped 46% over last year. The CEO says he sees a recovery across most of the country. But coming off the Great Recession, will the market for McMansions ever be the same? From New Hampshire Public Radio, here's Dan Gorenstein.
Don't ask New Hampshire home builder Joe Spain about 2011.
Last year, we had one inquiry for a new home.
This year, business is getting better.
We're up 700%.
Before, it was family homes, 3-4-car garages.
And I think today, people are more or less getting back to basics. You know, they're just looking to downsize single-floor living and then have moderate finishes to fit their budgets.
It may be back to basics for Spain's customers, but Fred Cooper with Toll Brothers, one of the nation's top builders, says that's not what their clients want.
While initial buyers came in thinking they wanted maybe the lower priced home, they ended up predominantly buying the larger one. That's really what they want.
So we may see more McMansions, but Los Angeles architect Buzz Udell says the funny thing is we won't see as much of them. One of the hottest new trends? Basements. No, not the ones with flimsy wood paneling.
You know, special event rooms and wine tasting rooms and media rooms and, you know, spas, and it goes on and on.
Udell says he knows of one newly constructed 9,000-square-foot home, 3,000 of those feet below ground. It sold for $9 million in 2 weeks. Wasn't even listed. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Now, Stacey, when you're working this early shift, you probably don't stay up for Leno, Letterman, much less like Jimmy Kimmel, who comes on even later, right?
I DVR it.
Oh, okay. Which do you DVR? Do you choose or all?
Actually, I DVR Jon Stewart.
Oh, yes. Also on in that time slot. The networks, of course, still get those huge audiences, even though, you know, The Daily Show gets a lot of press, a lot of attention. And late night TV on the networks is about to go where it has never gone before. ABC says starting in 2013, it's moving Jimmy Kimmel Live 1 hour earlier, and it's going to compete head to head with Letterman and Leno. Now, for decades, that slot has been held by Nightline, right? So you can enrich your mind and learn about what's going on in the world before you go to bed. The news show Nightline will move to Kimmel's old slot, which is an hour later, which is not very happy news probably for them. There will be a new Nightline primetime show as a sort of consolation prize. For more on the Jimmy Kimmel move and Nightline, we've got Mark Berman. He's editor-in-chief at TV Media Insights. Good to talk with you.
Nice to be here.
Jimmy Kimmel Live has been on, almost 10 years now. What is it that makes ABC think that he's the guy to take on these late night icons?
He's been on ABC since January 2003. His ratings are up year to year. He's up 3% in total viewers, which is unusual in this landscape because most shows are down. He has a young skew, and ABC is hoping to bring in younger viewers earlier into the evening in late night.
What do you think? Should Leno and Letterman be worried about him?
I wouldn't lose any sleep. However, he is an established presence on ABC. I always felt that he was hindered airing out of Nightline because that's a completely different audience than Jimmy Kimmel Live. Mm-hmm. And I think moving him up a half hour is a very good idea. I think he'll bring in more viewers and will help ABC in that day part.
The big loser here, perhaps, is Nightline. But Nightline was actually, as I understand it, beating Leno and Letterman in the ratings for its half hour. What's going on? Why move Nightline?
You know, obviously, Nightline is driven by what's happening in the news. So when there's a big news item, Nightline's going to get a tweak in the ratings. Nightline, on many occasions, delivered more viewers than Leno and Letterman, but it wasn't beating them in the younger demographics. The networks only care about the younger demographics. They don't care about 50-plus.
And the younger demographic, as is so often the case in these situations, means more ad revenue. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. It's all about the ad revenue. The networks care about the younger viewers. Kimmel's younger skewing than Nightline, and it does make sense to move him up a half hour. It absolutely makes sense because, again, I always personally felt that airing out of Nightline was not the smartest fit.
Does this move ultimately have much to say about our evolving cultural preference for jokes and entertainment over hard news?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, the networks, unfortunately, and I think they're very foolish about this, they don't care. Once you turn the big 5-0, the networks don't care about you anymore. I think that's a big mistake because I think the people that are older, at least hopefully in my case, once you're older, you'll have money to spend suddenly and the advertisers should be trying to reach you. But, you know, as it stands, the networks, you know, they want entertainment. They want to attract younger viewers. These kind of shows are the talk shows that bring in the younger viewers, not news-driven shows. Anything that's of a news nature brings in an older audience.
Mark Berman at TVMediaInsights.com. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Are you a beer drinker, Jeff?
Yes, I am when I am living during normal human hours. Enough about that.
Are you a Heineken drinker? Are you a Heineken fan?
My wife likes Heineken.
Oh.
As a matter of fact.
Well, actually, that's good news because the Dutch beer maker has been seeing sluggish growth, although it is not blaming this continent. Apparently, it says it's because of lagging demand in Europe. So Europeans aren't drowning their sorrows in beer like they used to.
Not fast enough for Heineken anyway.
Exactly. And that has beer makers looking to emerging markets for growth. Christopher Wirth has that story from London.
Let me introduce you to a new term. While some countries have a problem with over-drinking, others are experiencing what the beer industry has now dubbed under-drinking.
Under-drinking's a new one for me.
Trevor Sterling is a beverage analyst at Sanford Bernstein. He says as beer sales in Europe and the U.S. flatline, the likes of Heineken and Carlsberg are going after emerging markets where beer consumption is relatively low.
They would like to drink more beer, and as incomes grow in those countries, so consumers are consuming more beer.
Heineken, for example, is in a fierce battle to gain control of the maker of Tiger Beer in Southeast Asia, where beer consumption can be a quarter of what it is in Europe. Morten Insgaard, an analyst at Sidebank in Denmark, says it's all about getting their beer into the hands of under-drinkers.
They're all trying to educate the consumer that it is worth paying a bit more for a strong Western brand compared to a local beer.
But he says it may not be too long before under-drinkers start to have one too many. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
So as we wrap up here, Stacey, just a quick note about a guy whose own love of beer, or let's just say spirits, I don't know the exact beverage in this case, got him into a bit of trouble. A guy in Canada strapped four wheels and a lawnmower engine onto his picnic table, and he took it for a little spin through town over the weekend.
Really?
Yeah, it sounds very fun, and I have to say, very Canadian. A lot of these crazy things happen to come out of Canada. So that is not strictly illegal, I gather, at least not in London, Ontario. But don't go picnic table joyriding with an open container of booze in your hand, because that, evidently, they can get you for.
It's like when they got Capone for tax evasion.
That's right. It's always what you're not expecting. You would think it would be the picnic table with the lawnmower engine, but no, the old run-of-the-mill open container law.
Well, and in other beverage news, the company Honest Tea decided to find out where people are the most honest.
Of course.
To do this, they set up these unmanned kiosks across the country. So they offered dollar drinks on the honor system. You're supposed to pay a dollar if you took a bottled tea.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff, do you have any guesses over who came in first as the most honest cities in the U.S.?
Let me think for a moment. Well, you know, Mitt Romney is running for president, so we hear a lot about the Mormons these days. And Salt Lake City, I would think, would be a very religious town. And,
you're totally right.
Good honest folks. Yeah,
that's an amazing guess. What yes, you know? Salt Lake City and Oakland, California tied. They
Oakland,
had apparently
California.
100% of the people who took their drinks paid for them.
Oakland. Home of Moneyball. I don't, what is it about? What about Oakland? That would be interesting to look into.
Well, I think, you know, it's very wealthy, Oakland is.
It is?
And, you know, it's like an old hippie community, you know? It's like,
sure.
You know, it's like give and take, karma, all that good stuff.
Okay.
The least honest cities, though, what do you think?
New York?
Ugh, I hate that you got that right. So, well, it's not all New York. Venice Beach, California, and Brooklyn. Isn't that terrible? That's where I live.
Well, not just New York, but Brooklyn.
But Brooklyn, in fact, three subway stops away was where the machine was. Apparently, only 61% of people paid for their drinks.
They must be celebrating in New Jersey. not only that they weren't on the list, but that I didn't pick them. In Los Angeles, which, we're near Venice Beach, California, so apparently some of us are tea stealers. I'm Jeff Horwich.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.